The Transportation Policy Meeting will come to order. Representative Seltzer, have you read the minutes?
Yes, I have, Madam Chair.
Okay.
I'd like to move approval of the minutes from February 27th, 2013.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes stand approved as read. Representative Earhart?
That's me.
I'm waiting for you to take the testimony table.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 931 to be before the committee for consideration.
Thank you. And I understand you have an amendment to get the bill in the shape you'd like to have it discussed. Would you like to move that?
I do, if I can find it here.
Let's see. Would you?
The bill, the amendment is House File H-O-931-1A-1. And I'd like to move the amendment, Madam Chair.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Earhart, please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you. I'm going to do a walkthrough on the narrative, and then Mr. Burris is here to correct me for the errors that I make and add anything he would like. House Bill 931 is picking up where we left off probably in 2008 when we passed a Section 152, if I remember right. And that is beginning to run out of money now, and this year is probably the peak and the last of the monies that will be available for that, and we still have a great deal of unmet needs, which I'm sure we're going to hear about a little later, and we've been hearing about most of the session thus far. And so I don't know, do you all have a narrative in your, is that where we set that up, or am I the only one with it? Okay. Well, I'll zoom through this and we'll see then for testifiers what they would. This narrative follows the bill as amended. It invests over $3 billion for highway and transit improvements over the next 4 years. Authorizes a total of $800 million in trunk highway bonds, with $200 million authorized each year. And it directs the funds at this moment to the Transportation Economic Development Fund, which is called TED, and the Corridor Investment Management Strategies, SIMS, funds, and at the rate of $100 million a year to each of the two funds. And, of course, when we start issuing bonds on the Trunk Highway Fund, we have to provide debt service. So this bill raises the state gas tax by 5 cents per gallon in 2013. Goes into effect actually after the summer rush for higher gas is starts to dwindle, and then it increases the fuel charge by 1.5 surcharge by 1.5 cents per gallon each year for 3 years. They will not be selling the bonds all in 1 year, so we phase the additional debt service money in to handle the bonds as they're issued. As you know, that the MnDOT has a limit on the amount of debt service that they can undertake, and they are near the limit on that right now. We also have the longer range aspect that's to look at while the bonding money is falling off. And I don't know if we have that in the kit here, but their investment in roads and bridges falls off considerably starting in the next biennium. And this hopefully will keep them going on the roads and bridges that we so much need, and also on the transit aspects where we are going to compete with some of those cities like Denver and Seattle and Salt Lake, sister cities. We sort of look at them as, we don't look at New York or Chicago, but we look at comparable cities. And we know, for instance, that Denver is doing an enormous job of building transit projects and has been, and they're attracting the bright new people from 24 to 40, and which is what they are aiming at, to like to use their infrastructure and don't care much about cars, except maybe to go to the mountains in Denver, I don't know. And they are preparing the tech-minded person welcome to their city, and they have been successful at it. So that's the first part of this, and then we're mixing in some other revenue raisers as well. We are increasing the license tab fees by the tax rate from 1.25 to 1.375, and also increases the flat tax paid all vehicle owners by $10, meaning that you don't ever get away without paying something. I think the fee now is $10 or $35, and this would make it go up by $10 and so forth. This is a new item here that I don't think we've been taxing as yet, but this extends the state sales tax to all automobile parts and services and dedicates the revenue to transportation. With half of the revenue deposited in the CASA fund, county state aid, and a quarter of the revenue deposited in the Metropolitan Transit account, and a quarter of the revenue deposited in the Greater Minnesota Transit account. Assistant account. As you know, even Greater Minnesota, or Rural Minnesota, as I heard it called by an engineer about an hour ago, they are beginning to realize the value of transit services, and they need the money for their starts and finishes. It dedicates all the sales tax collected from leased vehicles to transportation, with the current distribution of the revenue 50% to Greater Minnesota Transit and 50% to Metro County Highways. It adds Hennepin and Ramsey to the county's receiving fund, which they were not on Section 152. I got that right? 52. Now, as you know, the governor called for in his budget a quarter cent on the metropolitan area for transit on transportation sales tax. We are asking for 0.50. I do not remember offhand how much the governor's quarter cent raises, and it may change depending on how the rest of his tax system is taken up by the legislature. The tax of 0.50 is split between quarter cent for transit, so that would make a half cent for transit and a half cent for metro county highways. Badly in need of is the heavily congested metro area, in different manners perhaps than the Greater Minnesota portion, where they have those nice highways but they're sinking into the mud because they're not built heavy enough. You know, that's crops to market. Anybody here from rural Minnesota? Yes. And they need to upgrade the roads that they don't have for our sugar beets and wheat and other things like that. And participation would be by county board approval, as it is now. This plan provides at least $100 million per year in additional revenue for the CTIB and $100 million for county highways. CTIB is the joint powers agreement between the metro counties that distributes the money very much in cooperation with Metro Council, Met Council, and MnDOT. This also authorizes a wheelage tax statewide. Right now, there's a wheelage tax in Hennepin and Ramsey, or no, the metro counties. No, did I get that right? Hennepin. Yeah, not you. Metro. Oh, it is. Okay. It authorizes the wheelage tax from the metro counties, and it goes statewide. Again, based on the fact that the county boards can make that decision. Now, if I remember right, Hennepin is not using that today, and I don't think Ramsey is either. It also has a cap on it of $5 per vehicle. We are removing the cap. And letting it go at county option. Now, the next point is that the counties in Greater Minnesota, it authorizes them to levy the current local option sales tax for transportation by county board resolution. In the metro area right now, we have county board resolution is the way the counties are authorized to collect and distribute the sales tax. And in Greater Minnesota, it's by referendum. And we're taking the referendum off and leaving it up to the county boards. It authorizes cities to create street improvement districts. That is, they can establish certain districts, a whole city if they wish, down to a set pattern described in the bill of creating a street improvement district for some particular street improvement that they might want to do in their city. And that broadens to several. Right now they don't have that authority, and it broadens it to encompass some folks that are undecidedly unhappy about it, but we'll hear from them. It imposed a fee for paying license tab fees late. Fine of 5% of the registration tax owed would be charged with the revenue deposit in the, with the revenue deposit in the highway user tax distribution fund. Now there are a lot of things, like you're looking at a lot of different moving parts here, but the reason for that is that these are going in different direction, and they're not all going to the highway user trust fund like if you think the gas tax does, and it does. They're going for other purposes, but all in the transportation mode. It exempts any purchases of materials or services made with dedicated dollars. That's trunk highway funds, CASHA funds, MSA funds, and MVEST funds, or transportation projects from payment. It exempts them from payments of the state sales tax. If I remember, the way that works is that we're paying those out of the state dedicated funds and turning them back to the general fund, which doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. So if we take off the tax on that, we will be relieved of transferring funds inadvertently from the dedicated funds to the general fund. It closes some loopholes in existing law related to the payments of the motor vehicle sales MVIS tax. Right now, gifts between individuals and vehicles purchased outside the state prior to residency in Minnesota would no longer be exempt from paying the tax. And the flat fee for collector vehicles would be increased from $90 to $150, which is some of these antique cars you've seen. I don't think the people would blink an eyelash because they spent thousands of dollars restoring them. They just love to keep their hands on it, and I think the extra slightly more than that, would be inconsequential. Bill provides $2.5 billion in new funding for state highways, county highways, city and township roads over the next 4 years, and provides over $700 million for transit systems statewide over the next 4 years. It's a balanced approach, and that's what I think is absolutely essential in a omnibus large transportation bill. For years, they were unable to move anything in the transportation system ahead because Greater Minnesota wanted nothing but roads, and the cities wanted to begin their move on transit, and they could never reach agreement. So when we started this thing in 2003, 2005, we tried to balance as much as possible the revenues that were flowing to each part of the spectrum here. Rural Minnesota wanted those roads. We also need roads in the metro and the suburban. But they didn't think much about transit at that time. They're beginning to think about it now. But in regard to that, we created a bill then that devoted the 7-county metro sales tax to transit, and we got some money for outstate transit, and we devoted as much as possible road money to Greater Minnesota. So that's the balanced approach that I think is necessary to pass a good transportation bill, and the governor wasn't around thinking about this stuff in 2005 and 7 and 8, so that's why we're adding something for the roads that he didn't think about when he created his bill for transportation. Well, with that said, I think we'll probably have some folks testify now, if that's okay.
Before we proceed, are there any questions before we start with the people to testify?
Okay.
Seeing none, do you want to call your testifiers?
Well, let's see.
Okay.
Margaret.
First
Donahue.
One, Margaret Donahue from Transportation Alliance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. And on behalf of the public and private sector organizations in the Transportation Alliance, we would like to thank Representative Earhart for introducing legislation that builds on the 2008 transportation funding bill and increases revenue for highways and transit systems across the state to reduce the growing unmet need and to improve Minnesota's economy. Thanks to the passage of the 2008 transportation bill, we are now driving on highways and bridges that would not be complete today without that legislation. Major bridges are now completed or planned for construction in the next couple of years that the state did not have the funds to build back then. We have now addressed the deficient fracture critical bridges in our state, making our transportation system safer and more effective. The funding in that legislation contributed to important projects like the 494-169 interchange, expanding Highway 60 near Worthington, the Central Corridor Light Rail Line, the Duluth Mega Project, and many, many others. Legislators did the right thing in 2008, and the result is there for everyone to see. We have more projects completed and more people working in our state. The transportation system, of course, is the backbone of our state's economy, moving people and getting commodities and products to market. Yet we sometimes hear that the legislature has its hands full this session and can't deal with transportation. We would argue that a strong transportation system is critical to the effort to improve the state's economy and improve the fairness of the tax system. We know that Minnesota cannot attract and retain businesses and serve the agricultural, timber, and mining industries, as well as retail businesses in our state, without adequate roads and transit systems. A more fair tax system recognizes the value of dedicated user fees rather than a heavy reliance on the property tax to fund road repairs. And any effort to reduce the unemployment rate in Minnesota has to consider the construction industry, which has been very hard hit by the recession and yet provides well-paying, living wage jobs that get people to work immediately while building the investments that businesses need. In fact, transportation-related jobs put over $2.8 billion in income in the pockets of Minnesotans and generated almost $195 million in income tax revenue in 2011 alone. While the 2008 transportation bill was critical, as Representative Earhart mentioned, much of the bonding, the one-time bonding in that bill has been committed. We're also paying back some federal funds that were advanced to the state. And so the problem is that MnDOT's construction program is definitely falling off a cliff, as you can see from this handout that was put together by the Department of Transportation. This is MnDOT's state highway construction season program. And you can see that fiscal year 2013 was a big year, but we will be seeing fewer and fewer projects in the future and fewer jobs unless the legislature takes action to change this picture. In addition, the Twin Cities metropolitan area congestion will continue to grow as almost a million more people move into the metro area, generating tens of millions of trips every day on our already congested highway system. Minnesota's transportation needs are significant. In just the first 2 months of the 2013 legislative session, we have seen bills introduced by legislators for specific transportation projects that would cost about $3.8 billion if fully constructed. And there's a list of those bills for you as well. The bill before you, in comparison, generates just slightly over $3 billion over the course of 4 years. So as you can see, there are important projects all over the state that communities have been waiting sometimes decades for that will not be completed unless some kind of additional funding is provided. The estimate of the gap in funding just to maintain the transportation system that we have today is $5 billion for state highways and over $20 billion for all modes in all jurisdictions over the next 20 years. The proposal you have before you today largely follows the recommendations of the Transportation Finance Advisory Committee, and I know you've heard that report. As you know, this was a group of business and community leaders, not people in transportation, who studied the needs on the transportation system and recommended different funding options. Those recommendations included an increase in the gas tax, an adjustment of the tab fees, the increase in the metropolitan area sales tax for transportation, the dedication of the sales tax on leased vehicles to transportation, authorization for local governments to levy a wheelage tax and create street improvement districts, and the use of bonding to advance needed projects, all of which you see in the bill before you. This bill adds an extension of the sales tax, which is also part of the governor's proposal, to automobile parts and services and dedicates that revenue to transportation. And this is actually an idea that's been around for a long time. There was a transportation study board in 1990 that came up with a number of recommendations, and dedicating sales tax on automobile services was part of that recommendation. Other states are grappling with the same issue. So another thing that I've provided to you is some information on what's happening in other states. So the state of Wyoming just passed a 10-cent increase in their gas tax. That was signed into law by Republican Governor Matt Mead. In Virginia, another Republican governor offered a plan for actually eliminating the gasoline excise tax and replacing it with a sales tax at the wholesale level that keeps pace with inflation. In Maryland, Democratic Governor Mike O'Malley just announced yesterday a plan that would apply a 3% sales tax to gasoline purchases while reducing the excise tax, but also indexing it to inflation. In Missouri, a House committee just passed legislation increasing their sales tax by 1 cent for transportation. Republican Governor Tom Corbett of Pennsylvania proposed raising the gas tax over 5 years to raise more than $5 billion for transportation there. Washington State Democrats just rolled out a $10 billion transportation package that increases the gas tax and tab fees and even imposes a bicycle fee. So Minnesota is hardly alone in dealing with this problem. Other states have very similar problems in dealing with their transportation systems, and other states are taking action. The states that do deal with this problem will be more competitive in attracting and retaining businesses. So in closing, there are projects all across Minnesota that are waiting to be constructed, and they will make our transportation system safer and more effective. They will improve freight movement all across the state, and most importantly, they will create jobs and grow the state's economy. But it will take more resources to get these projects done. So we urge you to enact legislation this session that will increase funding for transportation so we can get the projects that have been introduced and more done and improve our transportation system. Thank you.
Are there any questions at this point? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for coming, Ms. Donahoe. I have a question. You brought up Wyoming raising their tax to up 10 cents. Can you tell me how much their tax was prior to this increase?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Ms. Donahue.
It was 14 cents a gallon.
It was, Madam Chair. It was 14, so now they're going up to 24 cents a gallon. I find that interesting in a state that doesn't have any income tax, Wyoming.
Ms. Donahue, no comment? Any other questions before we proceed?
Thank you.
Next witness. Okay. Oh, would Mr. Harlan Mattson come? And he is a county commissioner for from Kandy, Ojai.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, I'm Harlan Mattson, county commissioner, Kandy, Ojai County. This is my 19th year as serving as a county commissioner, and I'm here as drafted. I was down for another testimony, and Abby was kind enough to draft me to have a few words. I'm not going to talk to you about specifics as far as the bill and all the technicalities. What I'd like to relay to you is from a citizen standpoint and a long-term transportation advocate. I would dare say that I'm perhaps the only dairy farmer in the room today. That's my livelihood as a dairy farmer. My passion is being a county commissioner, and I'm very passionate about the state of Minnesota. I have the privilege to live in other states, and I'm going to implore and ask you respectfully to seriously consider how we can move this state ahead in terms of economic development, public safety, and for the future of Minnesota. I had the privilege to sit on the Transportation Finance Advisory or the TFAC committee that the governor appointed, and Representative Beard and others in the room perhaps did as well. I want to cite just a couple of personal examples that I hope will bring to light some of the challenges we have as county commissioners in transportation. Specifically, last year in Kandy, Ojai County, we lost $300,000 in purchasing power. Now, $300,000 in the scheme of the budget in this particular bill is not a lot, but it amounts to 6 miles of overlay as far as the road. It amounts to building 5 miles of rural road as far as maintaining our freight and our agricultural. When I was first elected in 1994, the price of oil was $18 per ton. Now it's $60 per ton. The price of a snowplow was $125,000. I remember that distinctly because my second board meeting, we opened the bids for the snowplows. The bid we opened last year was $263,000. Those have decreased our ability to move ahead. I emphasize 5 words, and I've noted those here. Balance, looking at all-season roads, safety, economic development, and looking at the citizens' quality of life. I want to cite a very personal example that Representative Earhart talked about, and I will use very respectfully the word rural Minnesota. I don't like to use the word greater Minnesota, because lesser is the opposite of greater, and I prefer to look at Minnesota as a holistic view entirely. So I will use rural Minnesota. My father died a year and a half ago at the age of 92. He would not have been able to stay at home, to die at home, had we not had rural transit, had we not had those supports. My mother passed away on December 12th this past year. She would not have been able to stay at home had we not had rural transit. I am a strong supporter of transit, rural, urban, suburban, and a strong supporter of transportation. And we need to, I respectfully state, we need to get past the partisanship. We need to get past the politics and ask ourselves what is in the best interests of the citizens and businesses and the future of Minnesota. As we look at moving ahead, I implore you to recognize quality of life, our significant demographic changes, and the growing gap that is occurring with the funding of our roads, bridges, and our transportation infrastructure throughout the state of Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. I thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Burdick, are you going to make some comments?
Hi, my name is Abby Breidick. I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I want to let the committee know today that new transportation revenue is one of the top priorities for the counties this year, and we think this bill is an excellent start to get to some improvements multimodal and statewide. We're especially enthusiastic and appreciate the inclusion of the wheelage tax language and the removal of the referendum requirement for the Greater Minnesota sales tax. And I know you'll be seeing some other proposals, specific proposals to that coming up this week. I also want to mention Commissioner Madsen talked about the TFAT group, and you've heard presentations on this. And you know that the proposal that was recommended from that group, some could say was a bit more ambitious than this one. But even at those ambitious, quote-unquote, funding levels, the county system, the CASA system, was still only funded at 52% of what was identified for an economically competitive model. And that model was defined as safety improvements, no deficient bridges, building out our 10-ton road system for heavy commercial vehicles to use, and meeting the request for the Transportation Economic Development Program annually. So this was a pretty modest standard to meet, and yet even with that larger program, we were only funded at 52%. So we think this package is a reasonable request, and it really, really will help us move statewide on both local and state roads to a truly economic competitive system in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sawatsky.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Madsen, it's a pleasure to have you here today. Harlan is from Candiwai County, which is my district, and I think he spoke with great
passion.
And I think it's clear that I have big shoes to fill because but he's a great resource for me. But as I think you can tell, that rural means a lot to him, but Minnesota means more, and he is not here just for pleasing the citizens of Candiwai County or what will serve him the best, but the state of Minnesota. And I appreciate your time and effort and your good work. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this appropriate time for us to discuss this handout, or is that going to be at a different time? The one that says projects that can't be built without additional funding, is that going to be heard to...
I would think that would be for a different...
A different time?
Do you want to take this right now, too?
The question that I raised, Madam Chair, is in regards to transit and what the Commissioner talked about, in which these are here. So, I'll leave it up to you if you want to talk about it now or later.
Okay. Do you want me to go back?
What?
Okay. What I think we're going to do is hold off until we get a little bit more testimony. Next, it would be Mayor Jim Hovland from Edina, and then after that, Russell Hess from the Labor's District Council. Mayor Hope.
Madam Chair, thank you. Committee members, nice to see many of you again. I think this is the third time I've been over to the legislature this year talking about transportation. It strikes me that as I've been coming over here with all of the transportation bills, that we could be about to enter a golden age of transportation in Minnesota with the support that this infrastructure has among so many legislators, regardless of their party affiliation. Some of these things to me seem to be almost bipartisan no-brainers. This is a little bit more complex because you're looking for new revenue, but I can tell you from serving over the years on whether it's the 494 Corridor Commissioner, the 169 Corridor Coalition, working on the MinPass study for the metro area, working on this mileage-based user fee system analysis with Representative Hornstein, Representative Earhart, and others, there's a constrained budgetary environment that transportation exists in. And it's a vital, vital part of our infrastructure for our state. If we can't effectively and efficiently move people and goods, all the work that we do to try to make ourselves more economically viable isn't going to work. We've got to be able to move people. We've got to be able to move goods as fast as we can. So these efforts that are underway with these recommendations from TFAC, I think, are really critical for you to think about. There might be some things in here that you don't particularly care for. There's always resistance on the gas tax, but I know when I go to the gas pump week after week, I can't tell for sure what the price is going to be, and if there's an extra nickel in there, I don't think it would make much difference. I don't think people would be able to tell, or it would resonate that much with them, where they'd have that much resistance. So, as you go through this bill, and I've been asked to speak on behalf of over 800 cities in the state of Minnesota, and of course all of the Metro Cities organization, all of its members, carefully go through all of the elements of this bill that's proposed by, I think, maybe a half a dozen of your colleagues. And I think that as you go through that analysis, as you go through the session here, you will find that there are some very, very good elements of the bill. And I would encourage you to give it careful scrutiny and pass it. Pass it along, and make sure that you pass it almost in total, because I think there are some things here that you can be very, very proud of in the years to come as we become a better and better state with a world-class transportation infrastructure system. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the mayor? Thank you very much. Next is Russell Hess here. Okay. If you would state your name for the record and proceed, please.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Russell Hess, and I work for the Labor's District Council of Minnesota and North Dakota. Since we're going to throw rural Minnesota credentials around, I live in Plainview, Minnesota, inconveniently located at the intersections of State Highway 247 and Highway 42 in southeast Minnesota, although I do understand we're getting Highway 247 fixed this year, which will make my commute up here a lot quicker. When people ask what our members do, I like to say when you drive through a highway project and you see all those guys operating the heavy equipment, those are Jason's operating engineers. When you see the guys in the mud, out in the hot sun, or down in the trench, those are laborers doing the hard work of building our highways. Today I want to speak in favor of a comprehensive transportation bill that would not only strengthen our transportation system and allow for new economic growth in Minnesota, but more importantly to our members, provide thousands of family-supporting careers across Minnesota. Careers that provide good health insurance for, in our case, 23,000 Minnesotans are covered by our health insurance, livable wages, and secure retirements. The honest truth is, while politicians in D.C. play their partisan games that prevent a real long-term solution to our infrastructure crisis all across this country, here in Minnesota, we cannot sit back and wait while our roads, bridges, and transit systems crumble, along with the careers and family incomes of the skilled workers who do the work. We need the legislature to act this year to pass a comprehensive transportation funding bill. For our members, the numbers could not be starker. Work hours for our members working in the highway and heavy construction industry peaked in 2006 with approximately 4.7 million work hours. That's figuring about 12 hours a year for a full-time construction worker. That's the equivalent of 3,903 jobs. By 2009, when we reached the bottom of our current situation, we were at about 32% less hours worked for an approximate loss of 1,300 jobs. Through the three quarters of 2012 that we have numbers for, we're still off 17% from the peak and 700 jobs. With work hours so low, we're actually in our union trying to figure out how we could deal with a potential, what we call a brawn and brain drain, as skilled construction workers leave the industry looking for more stable work situations, ultimately raising the cost and delaying a solution to the problem even long at, you know, as they leave. It ultimately raises the cost and delays a solution to the problem even longer as we have to train a new generation of skilled workers to fill in those spots. In conclusion, our members believe that the 2008 transportation funding law, which I've seen numbers that said it costs the average Minnesota driver about $25 a year, was a small investment by Minnesotans that paid large rewards in improved roads and bridges and helped ease the strain on thousands of families. We want to build on the transportation funding package passed in 2008 and keep people employed instead of watching Minnesota's unemployment rate for skilled construction laborers go back up. We urge the legislature to act now to pass another transportation funding bill this year. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Hess? Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hess, I just want to go back. You said your calculations show that the package before us, the bill before us, would cost the average taxpayer about $25 a year?
The past one.
The past one.
The 2008 bill.
Great. Okay.
The gas tax raise cost, I think like one of Margaret's numbers actually cost the average driver $25 a year.
Thank you.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Yeah, some very interesting statistics, and I appreciate you bringing them forward. And I know you talked about the loss of jobs during the current economic times. Do you happen to have any idea how that same area, same time frame, affected other industries as well? Because I know there's a drop in other industries also.
Madam Chair, I can't speak. In fact, these numbers are a little confusing to us too, because it's highway and heavy construction. So there are other things besides highway construction in there. There is in our industry. Sometimes some of those jobs are absorbed by the building industry, but it's even worse in the vertical construction industry.
Thank you. Okay. Next, I have Tim Werke. And then after that, Randy Gerdes.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. It's my pleasure to be here today. My name is Tim Werke. I represent the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. We're a construction trade association made up of both highway and commercial vertical builders, and we're the state's oldest and largest construction trade association. I want to start by just thanking Representative Earhart for his vision in putting this bill forward. We really think that it is a necessary step, and it's a balanced solution between highways and transit that is so necessary in order to get something passed, as those of us that have been around these issues for many years have seen. There were some questions about the construction jobs in the construction market. I hope to be able to address some of that. My handout contains just some quick highlights that I'll cover. You've heard that the Minnesota construction job market was decimated by the recession. That is true. It was a depression here for our construction sector, and that is compared to other market sectors, whether it be retail, manufacturing, or others, but also as it compares to our peer states around the country in terms of construction jobs. Over 50,000 jobs left this marketplace in the peak of the trough, and we are only now starting to slightly pull out of that and see an increase in the construction marketplace. And it's been a slow recovery. You'll see on the sheet as well that one of the points I wanted to leave with you that investing in transportation is good for immediate jobs, but also is good for the economy as it prepares, as we prepare and invest in our economy for the future movement of goods and the providing of services in a more efficient manner. But there is a calculus that we use often that is on your sheet there. It comes from Professor Stephen Fuller out of George Mason University, and that's for every $1 billion nationally invested in construction, it creates 28,500 jobs, or to do the math, for every 1 million, it would be 28.5 jobs. And those jobs are broken down as follows. One-third of those jobs are direct craft hires. These are the folks that actually work on the project, the laborers, the carpenters, the pile drivers, those types. The other third is what are called indirect jobs. This is the salary that those people are paid when they buy durable goods, washing machines, ATVs, food, other items like that. And then the balance, one-half of the jobs are what are called induced jobs, which creates, as the money washes through the economy, those jobs that for the person that builds the washing machine or in other industries where the money is spent. There is also a report from the Federal Highway Administration that says for every $1 invested in roads and bridges, it produces a benefit of $5.20 in things like reduced vehicle maintenance cost and reduced fuel consumption, reduced congestion, those types of things. I think that speaks to the fact that this, if you look at this bill as an investment bill versus an expenditure bill. The last point I wanted to leave with the committee today is that there really is no better time to invest in transportation. If you look at the input costs today, first of all, the cost of money is at an all-time low. The cost of borrowing, therefore, is low. So we are not paying significant amounts of resources for interest. The construction input pieces, steel, aggregates, asphalt oil, those commodities have stabilized where we've seen spikes in those commodities in the past. So we're seeing stable markets for them, which allows for contractors to be able to estimate costs a lot easier and have a lot more assurance and not have to build contingencies into their bids. It's a competitive marketplace right now. I think if you had MnDOT sitting here, they could tell you that they have realized exceptional value over the past few years, that the actual engineers' estimates and the costs, we track that in our organization. If this committee would like to see that, I could certainly provide it. We track it year over year, and we see that there has been a real value in terms of the actual bids being cheaper than what the engineers' estimates on these projects have been. And also to our partners in the labor market, we are a beneficiary in this area of having a high-quality, very efficient, skilled labor force, and we benefit from that in terms of quality and in terms of production. And the last point I just wanted to leave with the committee, I know there are lots of things in here that you look at as fees, taxes. You all have to answer to your constituents. For those of us like myself that were around here in 2008 when the Chapter 152 passed the legislature, that anniversary was a week ago on Monday of the 25th. And at the time, there was a gas tax increase included in that bill as well. And there was a marked concern about the impact that that was going to have on consumers and businesses. And we had heard that it was going to be a draconian effect. 1 year to the day that that bill passed, with that gas tax increase, in it. The market price of fuel in this state was some 80 cents cheaper with that gas tax in the bill. I raise that for you to consider the fact that when you look at the tax element in the cost of fuel as a commodity, the tax element has very little to do with the price of fuel. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions? Next, then, is Randy Geertes, and then Amanda Durr. Please state your name for the
Madam
record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Randy Geertes. I'm the CEO of SRF Consulting Group. Transportation planners, engineers, and scientists. Our offices are based in the Twin Cities here. Today I'm here representing and speaking on behalf of the American Council of Engineering Companies of Minnesota, of which I am currently the Transportation Committee Vice Chair. ACEC firms in Minnesota employ over 5,000 staff, more than half of which are devoted to the planning, design, and construction of transportation infrastructure. Our clients include MnDOT, counties, cities, and other private sector clients. If generations of engineers before us planned, designed, and built the transportation system we now use today. And due to a lack of sufficient funding and initiative, our generation has been unable to adequately maintain, replace, and expand the system that has been provided to us. This lack of investment has resulted in potentially unsafe facilities that are highly congested and that are rapidly deteriorating. Engineers have been actively engaged, working hard to develop innovative solutions that provide temporary fixes to many of our long-term transportation problems. They have been doing a remarkable job getting the most out of what they have to work with. We have to face facts. We have fallen so far behind that we can no longer solve our problems with funding levels currently available to us. Until 2008, the gas tax in Minnesota had not been increased since 1988. During those 20 years, inflation seriously eroded the buying power of our transportation dollars, while the cost of materials and labor substantially increased. In 2008, a broad coalition of transportation stakeholders, including ACEC, finally succeeded in gaining an increase in the gas tax and implementing other financing mechanisms. At that time, we made it clear that this would not be sufficient to address the growing needs and that additional funding would still be needed. And much of the anticipated revenue increase expected from the 2008 legislation was not realized due to the severe economic downturn that began that same year. People driving less miles, fewer automobile sales, and less gas consumption due to high-efficiency vehicles were all contributors to this. We are still feeling the consequences today. Yet the demand to repair and replace and expand our roads, highways, and bridges has accelerated since 2008 and continues to do so. Failure to act is not an option. Current estimates for needed transportation funding indicate shortfalls in the billions of dollars over the next 20 years just to maintain what we have. Billions more are required to replace aging infrastructure and to provide additional capacity where it is needed. 1 million more residents are expected to move to Minnesota in the next 20 years, putting significant new demands on our transportation system. These demands, along with increasing costs without additional funding, will result in deferring maintenance and delaying needed projects, resulting in potential safety concerns, growing congestion, and missed economic opportunities for our business and commuters. House File 931 seeks to mitigate these impacts by investing over $3 billion over the next 4 years to help offset funding shortfalls. In addition, this funding will create opportunities for new jobs in the transportation planning, design, and construction industries and create many other jobs for supporting businesses. This funding will provide relief to local governments that have to increasingly rely on the property tax to maintain our roads and bridges. This funding will be used to enhance our transportation system in Minnesota that is badly needed to encourage business development and economic growth. Madam Chair and members of the committee, for 36 years I have been in the engineering transportation business. The engineers on a day-to-day basis have to deal with the results of lack of sufficient funding for transportation infrastructure. We deal with cities, we deal with counties, we deal with DOTs, and we have to try to find ways to make do with what little we have. We can't do that anymore. We need additional transportation funding. Thank you for your time. The ACEC Minnesota engineers urge you to support this bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Curtis, for this presentation and really kind of exemplifying, you know, the need that we have for additional funding. Earlier on in your presentation, you mentioned the engineering deficiencies that we have around. Do you feel that that's comparable throughout the state, or is it more in the metro area, or is it just as equal impact in rural counties as well?
Madam Chair, Representative, I travel the state a great deal. And there is no question about the fact that the needs are not only in the metro area, but also in the rural area. There's no question about that.
Follow-up, Representative.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next testifier would be Amanda Dirr. Okay. And then after that would be Steve Novak. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, my name is Amanda Dewar, and I'm here to represent the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. This proposal does much to help improve transportation in Greater Minnesota. It provides support for the TED program, which helps fund infrastructure projects that promote economic development. To date, this program has funded a lot of good projects in Greater Minnesota communities, and there are many more deserving opportunities for investment, so we are pleased to see that included. It provides additional resources for Greater Minnesota Transit, which will help our communities improve services to our seniors, students, and workers. The CGMC also supports the exemption of cities paying the sales tax on projects that are funded with the Transit Assistance Fund or the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, because it's using gas tax funds to go into the general fund. So we think that's a good proposal. We support the authorization for cities to establish street improvement districts, which will allow our communities to better plan for and fund needed transportation improvements. Currently, cities are largely reliant on local sources of revenue to fund our infrastructure. And in an era of repeated cuts and unallotments to the LGA program, many street maintenance projects have been deferred to prevent even more onerous property tax increases. So enabling cities with this tool would provide a dedicated source of local transportation funding to help keep our streets in good repair. The Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities believes that state transportation funding sources should be distributed equitably to meet the needs of both Greater Minnesota and the metro area. We're pleased that this proposal considers statewide and system-wide transportation needs. And as the committee and legislature develops its transportation budget, we hope that this spirit of balance continues. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you very much. Next would be Steve Novak, and then Jason George. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Novak, transportation lobbyist for the Minnesota Intercounty Association, MICA. And we're pleased to be here to support House File 931 and appreciate Representative Earhart's work along with those of others on this committee and staff for presenting to us a comprehensive bill that would go a long ways towards solving a lot of Minnesota's transportation funding issues. There's a number of specific things in this bill that would be very, very good policy for Minnesota's counties, the gas tax increase with the constitutional dedication, the significant bonding for highways across the state, the breakout of the metropolitan sales tax with specific reference to county highways, the transit funding, the inclusion of the wheelage tax, are all things that our organization has supported for many, many years, and would go a long ways towards upgrading our overall transportation and making it a continued important feature of Minnesota's economy. The final thing I just want to say is that of all of the many decisions that you're going to have to make over the next few months in the state budget, all worthy causes, significant amounts of money. If you have as one of your goals the expenditure of state monies that in the end provides significant new employment for jobs that are well paid and benefited, this is probably the best public-private partnership that you're going to find. You've got local counties in the state designing projects, creating the public revenue, but that revenue then goes out on bid to the private sector, the private construction industry, who on the whole employ people who are well paid and significantly benefited. And of course, the net result is significant improvement to Minnesota's economy and infrastructure, which tends to have a shelf life of anywhere from 20 to 50 years, sort of a gift that keeps on giving to the entire Minnesota economy. So I would just leave you with that thought, wish you well on your efforts, and happy to be of any support we can be. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Next is Jason George here. And then next would be Barb Tolman. Please state your name for the record first.
Madam Chair, my name is Jason George. I am the Legislative and Political Director with the Operating Engineers, Local 49. I hope you're not sick of hearing about jobs, because that's what I'm going to talk about, too. I think everybody in this room ran on jobs this time around the last couple of years, and I want to thank Chairman Earhart and Chairman Hornstein for putting that rhetoric into action. This truly is a massive jobs bill. Tim talked about the kind of jobs that are created with investment in infrastructure. My math, my poli-sci major math, so don't quote me on it, is this bill is going to raise about $3 billion worth of new revenue. That equals about 84,000 jobs. I can't think of a bill that I've heard about this session that creates that kind of economic activity. Tim talked a lot about the destruction of the jobs in the construction industry in Minnesota. I won't repeat that. It's been devastating. My boss gets the phone calls about people losing their house. I get the phone calls about people losing their homes. So there is a sense of urgency here. Just to give you an example, our membership was about 13,000 at the peak, and as Russell talked about, in 2005 or so. In 2010, that was down to 10,500. So 2,500 people, highly skilled operating engineers, best of the best, exited this industry in this state. And it's up to you where they come back. These people have a tremendous amount of skill. They're able to get work in many different areas of this country, and we want them to work here. And that's what this bill is about. The 2008, I'll just close, won't go on here. 2008, the funding bill and the stimulus package that was passed at the federal level was really about survival. Those two bills in Minnesota allowed us to survive, allowed our members to just get by, barely. And like I said, 2,500 didn't get by, they're gone. This bill is about, we've seen some improvement over the last year or so. This bill is about giving our workers and our members hope, and those families hope that survival is dependent on this industry. If we can get something done this year, these people might start coming back. So I really encourage you to act. the sense of urgency is tremendous. The time is now, and these workers can't afford to wait any longer. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you. Next, Barb Tillman, Transit for Livable Communities, and then Kent Sulem. Please state your name and organization for the record.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Barb Thoman. I'm the Executive Director of Transit for Livable Communities. Our organization has 10,000 supporter members. Our mission is to transform transportation to strengthen communities, improve opportunity and health for all people, foster a sound economy, and protect our state's natural resources. Transit for Livable Communities is a leader in the 45-member coalition Transit for a Stronger Economy, and you'll hear more about us and the bill that we're working on also at a future committee meeting. I'd like to start by thanking Representative Earhart for his early and his continuing support for public transit and transportation. He saw the value of public transit before many other elected officials and advocated strongly for it in the face of strong opposition, and our state owes him a great deal of gratitude. Our coalition is encouraged to see that House Bill 931 includes critical new funding for public transit statewide. There's growing demand for transit across Minnesota, but too few have access, and for those that do, service is too limited. Greater investment in transit improves access for everyone. Seniors, students, workers, people with a disability, and it can make a big difference in helping those people save money and make ends meet. For business, transit reduces the need to provide expensive employee and customer parking. Public transit also helps to reduce traffic congestion. So investing in transit creates good jobs, and it greatly increases affordable access to jobs. The vast majority of Minnesotans, 91% in the poll that we we're a part of, believe that public transit is a good investment for our state, and they're willing to pay more for it. So since this is a multimodal bill, we look forward to inclusion of policies and funding to increase the safety and convenience of people who are walking and bicycling, and also to help communities across Minnesota meet their obligations under the Americans with Disabilities Act as it relates to transportation, and those obligations are expensive. Across Minnesota, people are clamoring for healthy and affordable transportation options, and this bill takes a good step forward in making those happen. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much. And next, Kent Sulem. And is Sherry Munyon here? Please state your name and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kent Sulem, General Counsel with the Minnesota Association of Townships. I'm very happy to be here today to testify in very strong support for House File 931. Our membership many years ago passed an ongoing policy statement in support of periodic increases to the sources of the Highway User Trust Fund, primarily for us, the gas tax. We realize that that is not always a popular stance to be in among members of this body, but we do strongly encourage you to include the gas tax as part of the finance package because that is the portion that gets down to the local level. Our town roads consists of 56,000 miles of roads that are eligible for the gas tax funding. That makes us responsible for more road miles than any other entity in the state, more than most of you combined, with over 40% of the road miles in the state of Minnesota being township roads. They are often thought of as being purely local roads, and that's not an accurate point of view. Our roads are essential for getting farm product off the out of the field into the market. We're responsible for providing access to a number of the state lands that provide great recreation and support that part of our economy as well. Recently, we've had the opportunity to review some numbers from the state auditor's office, looking at our 2011 expenditures, the most recent year for which audit numbers are available. And it revealed a five-year trend that showed a 25% increase in road and bridge expenditures at the township level. At the same time, we looked at the increase in property tax and realized that we have gone from being approximately 50% property tax dependent in the year 2000 to being to being nearly 74% property tax dependent today. That's simply not a trend that can be sustainable in the long run. And so by doing a thorough transportation finance package such as the one before you, you will actually be helping keep property taxes down, or at least limiting the amount of increase necessary as the costs for these important projects continue to increase. And so we do very, very strongly encourage the full support of the package, and it has to be that package. If you start picking and choosing which finance pieces work, you're going to leave somebody out of the funding, and that simply is not a good state view to have. We need to look at all parts of the funding, because different parts of the funding reach different levels of government, and for us, it is the highway user trust fund, primarily through the gas tax. With that, I'll be happy to stand for questions.
Seeing no questions, thank you very much. Is Sherry Munyon here? Okay, is there anyone else that would like to testify at this time? Okay, Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to wait till all the testifiers were completed. I appreciate everyone's testimony. We've heard a lot of talk about holistic approaches and jobs, costs. I understand the need for transportation, but I've been sitting here waiting patiently to hear someone speak on behalf of where this money is going to come from. We talk about this gas tax. I look at the House Research handout that we got here, the overview. We're looking at a 9.5. If you look at bullet point number 4, it says increasing taxes on motor fuels by adding a 9.5 cents per gallon for gasoline and diesel. What this is going to hit, construction company vehicles, we heard a lot about construction jobs. We know what kind of mileage they get. You have public safety vehicles, police, fire, EMS, police departments. Frequently, as we heard in the Transportation Committee today, the State Patrol buys all of their fuel locally from gas stations, so the State Patrol is paying gas tax. We have local taxi cab companies. We have traveling salespeople that put on hundreds of thousands of miles. We have delivery services. We have courier services. We have the trucking industry, hundreds of thousands of miles per truck. And we're also looking at all of the government vehicles that also purchase their vehicles, such as, like I said, the State Patrol. So if they're going to be paying this 9.5 cents per gallon, it's going to get passed on. This is almost a double tax. It's going to get passed on to the taxpayer because they pay for their gas with tax dollars. My point being, Madam Chair, is I agree with these things are good ideas. They're good projects. They're well-intentioned. I don't agree with all of them, but I will say that we need to also bear in mind what this tax will do to the transportation industry, the private job providers, given the current budget situation that we're facing, and also the business-to-business taxes that are going to be almost nearly devastating for many businesses. It'll wipe out their margins. Adding a 20% gas tax increase on top of this, I think, is an issue that if we ignore, that we'd be remiss as a committee. With that, I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Representative Earhart, would you like to respond?
That was a tirade of many dimensions. There are users of the roads that have to pay for them. And I don't know how else we do it. And so we start with the most easily recognizable user fee, user tax, which is the gas tax. Now, in the future, sometime, there may be a different method of doing that, and that's the miles traveled, but we don't have the infrastructure in place, nor I don't predict it in the near future. According to the study that I sat on with Frank and others last summer or the summer before. So the answer is do we are we going to make vehicles or roadways and transit ways accessible to the growth of our economy? For instance, the Southwest Corridor, while costly, of course, is expected to expand the business people that travel out there by 20 to 30,000 people in the next 15 to 20 years by companies that are in the process of being created and that have already moved there, and the expected development. And I don't know what they are along the Hiawatha Corridor. Maybe somebody knows that, but there's the economic development that keeping the transit systems going. Same thing happens with roads. Is that mine? Anyway, it's if you've got another way of paying for that ability to move the people to the businesses, to move the crops to a market, to move the people to the places where they want to buy the carpet, buy the goods, we'd be happy to hear it. On the other hand, I remember in 2007 and 8, we must have had 1,000 hours. I listened to 1,000 hours of over 2 years. My committee did. When we'd have Roger Shearer, who Shearer Brothers Lumber, would come in and say, "I've got 55 dollar an hour truck drivers sitting in your congestion around here for hours, costing us thousands of dollars. You got to do something about the congestion." He was an example of that. We had the chairman of the windows company in
Marvin.
Not Marvin, but the other one here. In Bayport.
Anderson.
He was testifying, and he said, "You know, Marvin windows won't even drive to the cities. They go over to Wisconsin and drive down if they want to deliver." We had Medtronics come in and testify that they have to move stuff to the airport and not be counted on any wait time. I suppose some of those are products that need to be hustled to the recipient, whatever the reason. So business, if you like business and want to see business develop and grow, you're going to have to provide the access for them. And they're going to have to pay, like everybody else, for the roads. And the primary thing that we have going for us today is the gas tax. Now, you've heard that the gas tax has diminished. The latest report from MnDOT was that it's been pretty steady and not increased, even though we're driving more miles, over the past, I think, 3 or 4 years. Is that correct? Yes. And that's, of course, because more efficient cars, electric cars, and maybe transit. It's taking the pollution off the roads and putting them into cars, into rail and other forms of transit. So that means that we're not getting the growth on the gas tax that we have under the current scheme of taxation, and that we're going to have to increase this. That's what the governor's task force came to the conclusion of after looking at all the other things. And I could print you for next time we get together a copy of their three plans, which they suggested, but in effect, they all three ended up at 40 cents over 20 years. Maybe we'll get something else going before then, but so if you want to provide for, you know, there's another aspect here is we have to provide, once those goods are created and put out the market, wherever they are, small America, farmers, into the towns, we got to make the roads proper for these citizens to get there and buy the stuff. So that's always a case here. And if you'd drive, I can't remember where you're from, you're out 94? If you drive that road, you get a lot of feelings that maybe people want to start driving and riding bicycles, which is Barb Zolman would like. But I think that's a little bit of a tough spot on a freeway, because you know how bad that crowding is coming and going. I got the same problem in the diner where they have this is just the people going to work. They take a jam up there in the morning and at night, because there are three bridges that Highway 100 from the northern reaches to Bloomington have been expanded to three lanes, except for about a mile and 3/8, I think it is, through St. Louis Park. And there are three bridges there that have to be taken down. Instead of taking them down because they didn't have the money at the time, they put three lanes where only two were before, so that when you go through the tunnel, you have to drive sideways or you won't make it. Now, they have that on the schedule, I think, in 2015, somewhere around there, I think I saw it, to replace those bridges, and that's been sitting there for a while. So that's a congestion item that has to be taken care of. Well, there are reasons that we have to keep pushing it.
Did you have a follow-up? Okay, thank you. Members, we're almost out of time. A reminder, would you please put all of your paperwork back in the folder so that we are going to be using this again tomorrow? I know that there's a couple more of you that have questions, but I'm just going to take Representative Petersburg, and then we'll take the others tomorrow.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I thought I was going to wait for tomorrow. I appreciate that. And thank you, Chair Earhart, for bringing this this bill forward. It's very comprehensive. It has a lot of information to it. And just for a sake of partisanship, bipartisanship, I also actually like a few things in here. You know, exempting us from paying sales tax on our own programs makes a lot of sense, and allowing local governance to create their own opportunities for sales tax exemption, sales tax option also gives them more information. The questions that I have, though, is in regards to the dollars that you have, and I think specifically to this sheet that says projects can't be built without funding, and I'm not sure when that's going to be discussed, but I was reviewing the $3.8 billion worth of projects that are at least been presented for adoption this year. And of the $3.8 billion, because there's a lot of ranges, I show that transit alone is somewhere between $2.9 billion and $4 billion, which actually exceeds that $3.8 billion. And by the time you eliminate all of the other metro programs that there, it leaves only about anywhere from $300 to $500 million for rural Minnesota. And whereas I know that there is a high concentration of people here in the metropolitan area, I think we're still about 40% of the population is in rural Minnesota. It seems to me that it would be appropriate for us to at least say 40% of these new dollars ought to go to rural Minnesota to correct those roads, because all of the examples that you give about the concerns here in the metro area are also there. We had a discussion from Randy Gertis, who said that rural Minnesota has just as much engineering problems as the metro area, and so I think that's appropriate for us. So I would just curious about your comments.
Well, our comments has nothing to do with this. except that these are the bills that have already been submitted, and of all people here, there are some people that have projects that they've already put through as bills, and that amounts to $3.8 billion, if I'm reading this correctly. So the point is, if you want $3.8 billion or some of these projects done, and there are probably other bills in the pipeline that we don't even know about yet, then that's where $3 billion would go to do such projects. So I always ask people, you know, you've got this nice project here for Highway 14. Are you willing to vote for some increases in funding? And I've been doing that now for about 15 years, because people will come in and say, geez, well, you got to get this Highway 14 done. Will you vote for a gas tax increase or some other? And they say no. So this is not saying these are what's going to be done. It's just pointing out that the bills that have already been submitted are totaling $3.8 billion.
A follow-up, question?
Representative.
Just a quick follow-up. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chairman Eric. In regards to this, according to this, again, even if we want to do all the transit that are here at $3 billion, your bill provides for only $700 million over the next 4 years. It seems to me that that would indicate that we are going to have to deal with some priorities as well. Wouldn't you agree?
Representative Earhart.
I don't know which are the transit. I haven't looked at this, but we are on the transit projects. Of course, we also get federal funding. So what is that at? 50% now, yes?
Yeah.
Yes. So all we're saying is, here's a bunch of people in the legislature who want some jobs done. They want some projects done. And they put those in, and we've said, oh, we total those up, and it's $3.8 billion. So that's what it costs to go where you want to get things done. Are we done?
Representative.
Thank you. I'm sure we'll have more discussion later, and I appreciate the lively discussion today. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Earhart, I'd like to move that your bill be laid over so that we can continue the discussion tomorrow.
Thank you.
The meeting is now adjourned.